But Yakosa walked carefully over the rotting planks, unsure if this was the shack where he was born. Its roof was missing, and he looked up at the aluminum sky. It hadn't caved in, so he figured some South Texas zephyr galloped away with it. He stomped down hard, and fine orange dust lifted and formed a ghost in his own image, eager to dance or play cards, then sank back down into the cracks. He lit a Herzegovina Flor cigarette and murmured, "Somebody out there isn't doing their job," noticing he dirtied his authentic ostrich knee Wingham dress shoes. He tried to imagine what the place could have looked like all those decades ago, where his mother gave birth, what the hustling midwife looked like, where his father stood wringing his hat. The shack was small, as he'd expected. He didn't know why, but he thought there'd be no floor. The planks surprised him. He walked out of the threshold as if emerging from quicksand and smoked the rest of the Herzegovina Flor by his old Jeep, admiring the cavity structure on the dry, barren farmland. The sky was different than it appeared from inside, giving the impression time had never changed in the shack, and the rooms where we are born keep giving birth to us forever. The sun was rising. It was a roosterless dawn in the part of South Texas where no beast yawned. The old Jeep sped down the even older military surplus road. It had one of those stereos with the knobs and the needle, and quietly a corrido sang to Bellacosa. Y llegaron noviembre y diciembre, y enero, febrero, marzo y abril. He was doubtful now that that had been the shack, and as the pavement ended and the old Jeep hit the powdery road, Bellacosa slowed down, feeling strangely relieved that his birthplace was still a mystery to him. A few days prior, when he learned he'd have to make the drive to Calentula County, Bellacosa stopped by the records office for a copy of his birth certificate. His parents had been migrant workers, and Bellacosa was the only of their two sons to be born in America, for which he felt grateful. Though he'd always been poorer than his brother Oswaldo, down in Mexico, he could still cross back and forth without too many problems, and in his line of work, this came in handy. Bellacosa was a widower, trying to pull himself out of debt, but he never felt that he lacked for anything. He'd learned, unlike many people in South Texas, not to curse God for his problems, for his deep losses. "All my grievances and disgraces have been my own," he'd say. "And it's the divine spirit that throws me bones now and then." Bellacosa arrived at the McMaster's property on time, 7:30 a.m. He parked by the doghouse-sized mailbox on the edge of the property, turned off the old Jeep, and waited for the cloud of dust from the road to pass by. Bellacosa knew he'd have to talk to the Araña Indian farmer who cared for the land, and he was ready. He had no problem talking to these working Araña Indians. A lot of people now did, because of the stigma from the syndicates and shrunken heads, the filtering of animals. But it was all an accident. It wasn't these people's faults. These fucking Indians, he thought. After all, I'm a fucking Indian. We are all fucking Indians in the valley. That's why we're here. And what the hell is a Mexican Indian? A mistake. Columbus thought he landed in India somewhere. So that's what he called these Mexicans. Fuck Columbus. Fuck the Indians. I'm an Indian too. Fuck me. Bellacosa got out of the old Jeep and climbed an embankment of dry ferns onto the property. There were moaning whirlwind pillars and tufts of raisin-eyed pockmarked chickens clucking around. Before even saying a word to anybody, Bellacosa was already exhausted from the encounter he was about to have. He looked around for the 7900 rig, what construction people call la mano de chango, and what the Americans call the claw, the machine used to dig up large holes in the ground. He spotted the giant yellow bastard out back moping, wanting to hug the ground like a friendless drunk with its one mechanical claw. It was nearby a tiny green trailer where the farmer presumably lived, and about 50 feet to its left was a carpet of grain and feathers, boards nailed together like small bleachers, and a short dried trough. It was a chicken coop, apparently, but the chicken wire that kept it together was missing. Markings on the thirsty ground outlined the coop about 25 by 12 feet, and standing on the feathers and grain, waving a denim hat around, was the farmer.
Thank you for listening to this clip, provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.